I literally had a note that I wrote in my notes on this movie, and it was in big bold letters, and it said, I never want to watch another movie again.
Whoa. How you doing, everyone? Welcome to episode 16. Today, Adam will be reacting to his first time seeing Before Sunrise by Richard Linklater.
And Jake will be reacting to his first time seeing Tears of the Sun by director Antoine Fuqua.
Here's to the movies.
Jacob, happy to be back here again, which is always how I start these podcasts. So that's why I caught myself mid-section being lame. That's okay. The people know.
They don't care.
I really enjoyed our last pod where we talked through Star Wars as a whole, where we talked through the Man with No Name trilogy that's not really a trilogy and the man has a name, and where we talked through, you know, the ultimate in our dad's era of movies in Memphis Belle. So got a fun new batch of movies to talk about today. I kind of kept the dad theme going with Tears of the Sun. You went the polar opposite way with your film. But in general, Jake, this will be posted sometime vaguely around Halloween.
Yep.
I was wondering, and I wanted to ask you this, is there any movie that you or you and the kids or you and your wife watch every Halloween? Are there any movies that you just look for every Halloween that really ring that bell for you?
Well, since the kids have come along, we the Hocus Pocus movies, the kids enjoy.
How is the second one, by the way? I told you on the last pod, I'd just seen the first one for the first time. Is it too good?
Tonally, it's I'd say it's as good as the first one as a movie, but they're different tonally. Like, they tried to capture the spirit of the first one, but it's just like, it's never going to work. It's never going to be exactly when they're 25 years apart or whatever it is. But for a kid's movie, yeah, you can enjoy it. And they're spooky enough for kids to enjoy, you know, good Halloween flicks for kiddos. As for anything with the family, nothing new for Halloween flicks. I wish I could say otherwise, but there are definitely a handful of like movies that come to mind whenever this season, you know, pops up that, you know, maybe we'll talk about. What do you got? What did I say? What'd you do?
He's smirking. Sorry, again, sometimes we can take people behind the scenes, but there was a second there where Jake fumbled kind of what he wanted to say a few times. And I was trying to encourage him that he was doing just fine. And I was trying to say that I also did something. And what came out of my mouth was, me do.
Me do.
Me do.
Me do good.
And I don't even know what you said after that because I was just laughing at myself. It's pretty similar. We, on our very first episode of the podcast, talked about how my kids get in cycles of watching certain things over and over again. Mm-hmm. And we're getting close to where our Nightmare Before Christmas cycle will begin.
Nice.
It is a wonderful Halloween movie. It's got that vibe, right? And I also think it's a good Christmas movie, too. So I enjoy watching kind of all the way from mid-October through December.
And right.
My five-year-old absolutely adores that movie in all reality.
Maybe we'll try that this year.
Yeah. It's a good one. I think your five-year-old is ready. The younger might. It's right there, right? You know, if she's got a good personality, and I'm not saying it would be a personality issue if she didn't, but
you're saying she's ugly. Just kidding.
No, sir. But it's one of those certain kids I think couldn't get past the oddities of the film. Mm-hmm. I think your youngest will be fine. So give it a shot. See what
they
happens.
Like, yeah. They like Coraline. And they're like the end of Coraline, they get a little freaked out about, but overall they like Coraline. So I think that they're kind of primed for Nightmare on Elm Street, Nightmare Before Christmas.
How did they feel when you showed them the first Saw movie? Were they okay with that?
They're in therapy.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. That's all kids now should be. So from that perspective, I think that'll be it. I do think the kids liked Hocus Pocus enough that we watched it that I think we'll see that. And I think we'll do the second one pretty soon here. So that's good. For me personally, I haven't done it in a few years, but I used to really enjoy watching John Carpenter's Halloween on Halloween. And that's really like the most obvious answer. So I don't mean to be stereotypical.
Sorry, it's classic though.
Well, and there's something about Halloween. I can pick any number of awesome, scary films right now. I could say It. I could say A Quiet Place. I could say Saw or Paranormal Activity Scream. Or whatever you want to watch, right? Scream, yeah, great. Scream would be great. But there's something about watching a movie that does take place around Halloween on Halloween. I almost think, what's the season of Stranger Things where they dress up like the Ghostbusters, like that? There's right. something about the actual aspect of Halloween being mm-hmm. in Halloween movies that does, it sounds like I'm Captain Obvious here, but it does kind of give you that spirit, right?
Have you ever seen the Trick or Treat movies?
No.
I have never seen them. Maybe we should
yeah, that'd watch be fun, one of those. Maybe, yeah. I assume they're slashers, right? As far as we could tell.
As far as I can tell.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we've talked about this a few times in the pod, but my grandma, who's 85, is a massive fan of horror.
Yep.
I have to be careful because I can't say she's a massive horror fan because it'll be a second where it sounds like I'm calling her a massive whore.
which you just did.
I know, which is why I stumbled there and adjusted. But she's a massive fan of horror films.
And we're recording it and putting it on the
That's
internet.
Great. I mean, that's fine. She'll never listen. She doesn't know how to work her phone. And so because of that, when we go see movies in theaters, I like to, you know, make sure it's a scary film. And I always, you know, send her DVDs and Blu-rays of scary films because that's just what she likes. So I am less of a fan of jump scare films. I don't care. I'm not like, it's not a scaredy thing. I think it's cheap, right? It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I do love movies that tell a story in a creepy fashion or have a mythology behind them, right? So that's why I really liked the first volume one of the remake of It, you know, or the Quiet Place films are absolutely lovely. The original Halloween, the original Saw, I'm now just renaming movies we've already talked about in the podcast 4 minutes ago, but those are the ones that are foremost in my head. Even, you know, The Omen, the original, or those types of films. Anything with possession, you know. I think the new Exorcist film just came out in theaters, and the original Exorcist, while I don't... Exorcism movies get to me, man. Like, I don't get scared a lot, but something about kids, like, being possessed by a demon as a dad really, really, really hits home. But The Exorcist would be a great reel. Turn the lights down. Spooky season here. It's always raining where we live right now. It's you know, the trees are always blowing in the wind, and it would just be a real terrifying experience to watch the first Exorcist right now. So there's a lot, but it really is something about films that actually involve the holiday of Halloween that right. speak to me.
As a kid, all you had to do was put on a mask and stalk, and I was in it. Like, you know, all the Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Scream, all it. If you could dress up as the villain in the movie, I was all about it. And then, you know, I used to throw like the Alien movies in there, like it just like anything that was scary and dark and, you know, just any amount of dread involved. Like, that's a Halloween movie to me, you know, but as I've gotten older, yeah, I think the psychological stuff tends to creep you out a little bit more. It's like you get into your possession movies or like Hereditaries and stuff like that. So ultimately this is all going to be leading to my ultimate horror movie, which I'm a walking stereotype now. I don't even know what to call me. Like, no one's going to be surprised when I say, like, The Shining is my horror movie. You know what I mean? And it's not just because it's Kubrick.
Yeah.
A big portion of it is. And a big portion of it is the fun conspiracy theories and the fun stories that you can pull out of it if you want to. There's a whole bunch. But I just love the movie because every time I watch it, I feel new things. I see new things and I just appreciate it so much. And I know a lot of it is the lore of Kubrick, and like, there's this the legend of everything you see in the movie is 100% intentional. Okay. That's any filmmaker would love to be like cast as like someone who did that. You know what I mean? Because then you can, yes, you can say, yes, that looked bad, but I did it for a reason. Or yes, that looked amazing. You're welcome. or yes, that can of tomato soup does have a Native American on it. What does that mean, friendo? and it's just like, you can just like use that to your advantage so much. And let's just pretend that that is the case. 100% of what you see on the screen is intentional. This movie has many, many continuity errors. There's different things in this film that the typewriter changes color halfway through the movie. There's chairs vanishing in the background from cut to cut. There's like all sorts of stuff going on. Okay. All that's going on. So you get the psychological thing, and it could be literally the filmmaker fucking with you. Mm-hmm. Like, he's meant to make you uneasy. So he's making your eyes see things and then not see things. And then you're like, your brain is subconsciously like misremembering or not understanding why you feel uneasy. You know what I mean? It could be just an experimental tool that he has, where it's just like during a conversation, it's cutting back and forth between Jack and his wife, Wendy. And in the background, there's a chair that keeps vanishing and reappearing from cut to cut. And it's not perfect. It's not every single time, but it does happen. And I'm just wondering, is it strictly a continuity error, or is it them psychologically trying to manipulate you into being like, why do I feel so uncomfortable right now? What is it about the, like, you know what I mean? And if you just do that throughout the whole movie, it just like makes your brain kind of scrambled in a way that you don't realize it's happening to you. And so like you're affected by it, but you can't quite put your finger on what it is.
With my knowledge of Kubrick, that is ever expanding, obviously, since we started this pod, but it's still rudimentary. It's definitely intentional. Like, there's no way that man, of all people, made
errors.
That's
what I'm saying.
Like, everything he does, even the things I disagree with, you know, are very purposeful, right?
Right.
When, you know,
those little details, though, were just like the fun little stuff that I like. And then there's like the nitty gritty of the story and him trying to, like, he was intentionally trying to break down a barrier of story within that movie. Like, things happen that just don't have clear explanations.
Sure.
And I'm sorry you haven't seen this yet. Or like you haven't had a fresh
review. It's been so long that it will happen. Yeah.
Maybe we'll try and get you to do that before. It doesn't have to be necessarily assignment movie, but we could just chat about it another time. Regardless, it'll be assigned to you if you don't. But that movie in particular is messing with us on a physical level, a tangible level of man goes mad, tries to hurt people. I'm not giving anything away. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Look at the damn cover of the movie.
No, I know the beats.
And it also, it's affecting you on a psychological level, like the Hereditaries and like the Exorcist and stuff like that, where it's kind of an onslaught of horror. That's why I love it, is because it's legendary. Yeah. It wasn't really well received when it came out. It's one of those cult things where it just like grows over popularity over time. People love talking about it. There's so much to talk about. But again, we'll wait for you to have a nice fresh rewatch.
One thing, I've really enjoyed the Kubrick theme that we've had running through this podcast for its first year here. And I will say, despite the Barry Lyndon debacle that, you know, two episodes ago, I hope that doesn't put a slowdown or a damper on it, because I am still really excited for what's to come, because I have been holding off on doing that full 2001 A Space Odyssey rewatch. Like, I haven't seen A Clockwork Orange since I was very young, way too young. And
too young. And you're always too young to watch that
movie. Exactly. And same with The Shining. I know all the beats of The Shining, but it's been so long. So I'm still very excited. It reminds me, I'm still very excited to do this. You know, one thing you said earlier about how you can dress up as the villain, right? And it got me thinking about how big into the first Scream we were. We were, what, 10? And then when that came out, give or take.
1995 or 6.
Yeah, so we were 10 or 11. We got the ghost face mask, and we got our parents' video recorder, and we made our own Scream movies around the house and all that stuff. And it made me think, like, can you imagine if you're walking down the street with your kids trick-or-treating in a couple weeks here at Halloween, and you see someone dressed as Ghostface walking by you, no big deal. You see some kid dressed as Michael Myers, no big deal. You see some kid dressed as Freddy, no big deal. What if you saw some kid dressed as the Hat Lady from Dr. Sleep? That's where I would cross the road. Yeah. Like, I was just thinking of all the characters, like, that is still the hardest, one of the hardest movies to ever get through for me ever, because of one particular scene with her. And I was just thinking in my head, like, that would be the most twisted possible costume anybody could ever wear.
We should set aside 6 hours and watch. We'll watch it on my projector, The Shining, and then the extended apparently masterpiece cut of Dr. Sleep.
And I thought the regular cut was good. I like Dr. Sleep. Like I said, other than that one part that almost had me turn the movie off. But I know Signs by Shyamalan isn't exactly the movie that people associate with horror, right? It's more of a sci-fi thriller, probably.
That's but effective. I will say that movie's effective.
Yeah, seeing that movie in the theaters for the first time, that experience of A, the leg and the corn.
Yep.
And then B, the birthday party video with Joaquin Phoenix watching it. Those moments, and there's one where I think it's standing on top of the hand
grabbing the face. I won't say well, just in case.
And it's standing on top of the barn at one point. Those four points,
dude.
Not so much ending, but those four points. They still like I think about it, and I get those willies that kind of go through the nervous system, you know. And it's cool, and I don't have a lot of experience like that. I don't really get too affected by those things, but that movie sets it up so well. The way the wind is blowing through the corn, and the use of light and dark, and you feel safe during the day, but you're really not. I mean, that's where the cat pantry scene happens. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that kind of always, if I want to give myself, you know, the heebie-jeebies, despite the fact that the last 5 minutes or so, it's cool, but the visual isn't exactly what I wish it was, but the premise of it is cool, but it's up till that point, man. It's just like, it's like, ooh, you know, right. it does that in a way.
Say what you will about the ending. I actually really like the ending because of the emotional stakes, but the son, like, I think that saved the ending for me.
Well, the way it's like done is perfect. I just wish it was a person in a suit, not a CGI.
That's all you're saying.
Everything else about it is perfect. I wouldn't change a single thing. I just put
Signs
skinny
in the theater.
Dude in a creepy alien suit.
There. Right. I kind of wish it would have been cool if they just found different ways to, like, I loved the reveal of him, the reflection in the TV, and they slide the TV over, and he's like, that was beautiful. That was amazing. Awesome. And then if they would have, like, somehow figured out a way to keep doing that in different ways every time, to where they never had to show the full body. It's just like you get the shape, you get the movement, the gestures, whatever, but then everything else is left up to your imagination. They didn't actually show everything.
Agreed.
I think that would have been a really great way of going about it. But regardless, awesome movie. Seeing that movie in the theaters, like, kids nowadays don't fucking know. There's just certain films that we got to witness in the theater that were just amazing stories to that. God damn it. They just don't make them like they used to. And so old.
They don't make them like Memphis Belle anymore.
Right.
Or,
but like the bad Signs, but Sixth Sense. Yeah. Come on. Those movies in the theater were magic.
Agreed. No, I agree.
That was awesome.
I totally agree with you. It's funny because as soon as you said, I totally agree with you. But at the same time, as soon as I saw it, I was like, my daughter was so terrified during like the Super Mario Brothers movie. Like, she gets so scared of anything even remotely. Like anytime the conflict comes up, even if it's not a scary conflict, she gets so anxious. She's such like a peaceful child. And I've probably, and it's probably my fault. I've parented her in some flawed way, but she like hates people getting in trouble. We've gone over this numerous times on the podcast, but she like vibrates with fear and like buries her head in my shoulder. And I'm like, maybe she's getting the experience in just a very, you need to see a therapist.
Love how it just, how many generations? Is it four generations? Your grandma obsessively loves horror movies and your daughter, and then transition down to your daughter, absolutely terrified at Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yep. That's how, you know, back to my grandma for a second. She was a daughter with three sisters. So there were four sisters, and they, two have passed on now, but there's two who are, you know, still hanging in there. My grandma and then her sister, Aunt Mary, and they both love the horror movies. They're both really into them. So they always recommend them, except the difference is my grandma is more into like mainstream horror movies. My Aunt Mary is like finding stuff on, it's like an 8mm snuff film. No, it's not quite that, but she listens, like some of the things my grandma's been like, oh, Aunt Mary told me about this. Should I watch this? And I like Google it. And I'm like, no, you probably shouldn't watch that. No. But, one time my grandma was like, oh, I got the Human Centipede from the library because Aunt Mary said I should watch. And I was like, grandma, turn it. I was like, don't do it. I was like, I've never seen it, but I know what it is. And I was like, just return it. She goes, why? And I was like, all right, I'm just going to explain you to the premise of the film. So I did, which was not the words I'd ever thought I'd say to my grandma.
Said, I have to see this.
luckily she was like, yeah, I don't know that I can do that. And I'm like, I don't think most people can, you know? but that's, you know, you don't think often you'll talk about your grandma and the Human Centipede in the same sentence, but this is the life we lead, Jake. Well, I think that's good. I think we
well, come on, tell me, you know, my top dog, my favorite horror movie. What is yours?
If you
like, we're recommending two movies to watch around the holiday or Halloween season. Mine is The Shining. Adam's is.
Oh, geez. I didn't do enough homework. I was just thought we were generally talking about this. I would say you need probably watch the original Halloween. That's probably the answer. And it's very stereotypical. I wish I had a smarter answer, but that's really the one to me.
It's super important to see. Mm-hmm. Like, to see where the foundation of where this all, like, what.
Yeah.
What we have today and why it exists is because of that movie.
Yeah. And the music is still, I can just do the music on cue. There's very few musical cues I can just do. It's like that, Last of the Mohicans, Terminator 2, and The Rock, you know?
Right.
And it's really, it represents Halloween. It's scary. It actually is on Halloween. It's, you know, a story we all know, but every time I watch it, I feel like I pick up more little things.
Right.
And you know, you can, if you want to, watch sequels to it, but I'm good with just watching one.
No, I would say just, going from there. Just make a tradition of watching that first one.
And it's not like a movie. It's not my top 100 or anything. It's just one of those that at the right time, it hits you in the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were just going for pure fear, or if you were just thinking of the fear aspect of it, I could name some other things, but that would be the,
I would like to see the theater.
That would be cool. Yeah.
There was a couple more, something a little more obscure, like we already did the Monster Squad, and that's a good Halloween one for like mature kids and adults.
It, I still think It Volume One, the when they're the kids, the new set of movies, but the first one only when they're kids. I think that there's something about kids in movies on Halloween that really works too, because that's when you're most in love with Halloween, for sure. Right?
I would suggest the first TV version. The first half.
The Tim Curry,
And the new one, the first half. Both of them, I think, are very creepy movies. Yeah. And I think they work in their own way.
You ever read the book?
Nope.
Don't?
No.
I'm not going to say what it is.
Because I know people, it's dark. I know it's a lot darker than the films and all that.
People who know will know, and they'll know exactly what I'm referring to. But in the book, at the break, after the kids defeat it as children, as they're leaving the sewer system, something happens that is so unbelievably.
I think I know what you're talking about, but I off putting. We won't.
And I'm so glad they didn't put that in the movie.
I think I've heard this.
That's before. What I mean. If you know, you know. I'm not going to go into it, but
no, we have daughters.
Yes,
let's move on.
But yeah, that you're right. You could do the TV movie too. You know, from the 80s, because that's a really, that freaked me out as a kid, man.
Yeah,
man.
I grew up on it. It's,
same.
It's a yeah. But I'm happy that the modern day kids have like updated version of it.
They did a great job with that. Yeah, one. Great kid acting and everything. It was a great movie. Ready to talk about some movies, Jake?
Let's do it.
Like we haven't been for the last 30 minutes.
No shit. God, shit, stop. They're going to talk about movies now.
Hey, finally, I'll stop fast forwarding through the podcast. Jake, let's start with Tears of the Sun, if that's okay. So I assigned you 2003's Tears of the Sun, directed by Antoine Fuqua.
There you go.
Who is a prolific action movie director, and this was something a little different. So what were your thoughts on Tears of the Sun?
Coming from a guy who, you know, is pretty sensitive about babies in peril and children and sad stuff. God damn, I'm the best podcast host ever. Sad stuff.
You summed it up. Maybe you literally
I'm kind of like, I was a little bit actually mad about watching this movie.
Yeah.
I don't recommend this movie. Sure. I think it's, I think it is important on one level and one level alone, and that is to show the horror that has been going on and probably is still going on in other countries that need more light shone on them, shined on them, however you want to say it. Other than that, it is a big time downer. It is nothing but innocent people being drugged through the worst conditions on Earth, hell on Earth. And yeah, I guess I wasn't prepared for it. I was expecting more of, I guess, you know how Predator is men pummeling through the jungle, looking brooding with one-liner jokes.
Yeah.
And it takes itself super serious, but somehow you walk away feeling entertained.
Sure.
This no. is
yeah.
that without the one-liner jokes and watching very innocent people being harmed or potentially harmed in the worst ways ever. And it's like while the villains are like kind of smirking their way through it while they're just devastating, doing these devastating acts. And there's nothing redeeming. Like there's no, like the yes, I get that these SEALs or these, are they Green Berets? What are they? They're whatever they are.
Specialized military special unit. Forces.
Yeah. I get that they're technically doing the right thing. They're making the right choices, but they're not happy about it. And so it doesn't even feel like a heroic act. It feels like you're only doing it because you know your moral compass is making you do it and you're mad at yourself for doing that. So I guess it creates a complex emotion there, which is, I guess, smart for storytelling. The reluctant hero type thing. It's hard for me to put into words.
Sure.
Why I'm kind of like mad at the movie. Maybe I'm just mad at you. Maybe the movie is exactly what it needs to be and it deserves to be that and it's important. And I'm just like thinking, I think I did not expect it to be as weighty as it is.
Yes.
Because you assigned it to me. And yes. I know that you, I didn't feel like, I felt like he assigned me this movie. He must love this movie. Yeah. And so when I was sitting, when I'm watching it, I'm like, what the hell, Adam? What are you doing? What are you doing, man? Like, this yeah. is supposed to be fun. This isn't fun.
No. And truthfully, I do really like this movie, but I don't like it because it's, you know, there is like tactical, like action, quote unquote, you know, in the film. If you like military movies, if you like, you know, soldiers being super efficient and formations and all that kind of thing, I think people can appreciate certain things about this, but I think it's really well acted. I think it's got a really cool story. So effectively the story is this team of elite, you know, specialists sent into the middle of war-torn Africa to evacuate this white doctor. And she doesn't want to leave all, you know, the Africans who she has been helping mm-hmm. this whole time behind because she doesn't feel like she deserves that more than them. She wants to stay. So this team tells her, okay, we'll take them all with us. They take everybody to the rendezvous. And then at the rendezvous point, they're like, actually, we're not. We're just taking you. We just needed, that was what it took for you to come along. But yeah. then at the last minute, Bruce Willis decides he does actually start to feel bad and grow conscious.
Oh, no, he took off.
That's not what we can do, right?
They took yeah. off.
And then they go back.
And then halfway home, he's like, turn around.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, man, I really wish you would have like felt that way before you got in the chopper.
Yeah.
And like, it's like unnecessarily pissing me off.
But that's, yeah, that's the point of the switch. So right at the beginning, he's following orders. He wants to keep his soldiers safe. Right. And that's their job. But then he makes the switch. And at that point, he's deciding we're doing this thing. I'm disobeying direct orders, which is obviously not a thing you're supposed to do in the military. And then two, he's leading his soldiers who he's responsible for into very likely death, of which most of them do die. Because he wants to, quote unquote, do the right thing, right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean, quote unquote, it's legitimately doing the right thing.
It is.
But so then it's a story of now this group of these refugees along with this doctor and then this group of soldiers who all don't like each other because they all – the refugees see these soldiers as people who just almost left them behind. And the yeah. soldiers now see these refugees as baggage that's going to likely get them killed, right?
Right.
And this is uncomfortable, intentionally so. Now – all this is presented in this action-ish movie package, but then it gets to the middle of the movie, and there's this part where they descend on a village, and they don't have to go into the village. They decide they could just go right past the village, but they can kind of tell what's happening in the village, and I'm not going to get into everything that goes in the village, but they go in there, and they efficiently wipe out all the bad guys, and they find what has been happening there, and it's awful, it's horrible, it's the reason this movie is so hard to watch is that scene, all of it, but that scene really encapsulates it, right? So if by that point you are not like sickened by all this, by the time you get to the village, you shall be sickened. there's no getting around it, right? And that's ultimately where I think the acting is top notch, way better than a movie, than most 90s Bruce Willis movies had. You know, I think he's great. I think Cole Hauser is great. I think there's a lot of really good acting in it. I do like the few slight twists and turns to the movie on things that you find out about people, you know, on both sides. And I do like that it does present this as, hey, be aware that, you know, we all know about the Holocaust and we all know about most of these terrible genocides and things that happen in the world, but there is this big one that happened and in a way it continues to happen and nobody thinks about it. So I do like that it's shining a light on that. And I do think it was presented in a very, it's a very, to me, a quote unquote good movie, but it is a bear to sit down and watch through if you are a person who like even slightly cares about the well-being of other humans, you know? So, right. So yeah.
And I think that's what it ultimately comes down to is I'm a glutton for drama. I'm a glutton for very serious movies, but there's just a certain type of truth and a certain type of evil that we all know exists in the world that when you're faced with it, you can't help but be sickened by it. And that's just, this is one of those things.
It's why on Saturday nights, I don't just pop in Schindler's List all the time, exactly. Right? Oh, 100%. I love Schindler's List. It's an amazing film, but it's the hardest thing. It took me 5 tries to get through the first time. It's incredibly hard. And this, but you knew going into Schindler's List what it was. This movie, you don't go into it knowing what it is.
I didn't anticipate. I mean, Tears of the Sun, it sounds like it's going to be a sad movie.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I get it. I wasn't prepared for, and I know a lot of this has to do with the fact that I'm a father now. And like, I'm hypersensitive to innocence.
Same.
And protecting that. To the point where it's like, it doesn't have to be about a child. It can be a full grown person. But if they're an innocent person and they're being treated in a way that just is obviously evil.
Man, and then throwing children getting treated evil.
It fucking gets to me. And yeah, you throw in the kids and it's just like, it's all bad.
It's brutal. And I guess
the movie does its job by.
It does. I do think I can say confidently in my head that this is a very good movie. It is not an enjoyable movie at all.
No.
Now, this is also not what Rob Kidd wanted us to talk about when he wanted us to do a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah, there you go, Rob.
Yeah, I hope you're happy.
Hope you're happy. Here's your Bruce Willis movie.
I have seen this movie multiple times in my life, and I will say this last time was the first time I'd seen it in probably 7 or 8 years. And it hit me way harder this time. I think as a young, dumb teenager / probably early 20s, I appreciated the horrors of the movie. Mm-hmm. I knew, especially that village scene, I knew it was coming. I remembered it. But it hit me much differently this time. And again, I still think it's a good movie. I think the whole final battle does such a good job of showing that in action movies, you know, normal action movies, the hero's gunning down 40 bad guys right. and getting always shot in the arm or the love handle area. and this movie really, I mean, there's what, 8 soldiers and I think 5 of them die. And the 3 who are left at the end are obliterated. I mean, like Bruce Willis has 1 eye and is bleeding from 90% of his body. And, you know, his other 2 soldiers are just shot in 6 different places. Like, it really does show you that when you're facing, you know, a lot of movies make it seem too easy, right? This movie does a good job of not making it seem too easy.
No, you're right there.
So, yeah. So anyway, again, not super happy movie at all. Not a fun movie. We're not sitting here like, guys, everybody have a bucket of popcorn and a whiskey soda and go watch this movie. But, you know, if you feel like watching something that is deeper than you expect and you know, shines light on something that you don't expect, I think it is worth seeing.
I think it'd be important for like a history class.
Yeah.
Like kids, I think if kids of certain ages should see this type of movie, same with Schindler's List and any like, accessible, like things that are good for kids. Like they can sit, like you tell them, we're going to sit and watch a movie in class today. It's like, and they have no clue that what they're about to see is actually going to affect the way they see the world,
mm-hmm.
you know? that's, I think those are very important films.
Yeah.
We should actually intentionally have like an episode about those types of movies sometime, sure, where we like try to challenge each other to find those types of movies. That's something that we haven't seen before, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no,
movies that present you with uncomfortable realities.
I suppose it's important. I'm grateful that I saw it because it really just like makes me even more attuned to how I feel about many things, and I keeps my head on straight, I guess. Yeah, you know, see what's actually important.
Very well said. And I think the funny thing, if we're going to find something funny, is I gave you this movie as an assignment like 6 months ago. But the reason we did it initially, just kind of behind the scenes here, once in a while, when we have time to record, we think about recording an extra pot. So we have some extra time, you know, because we want to be consistent. And so long before our summer break, we decided to assign each other an extra movie just to get ahead of things, right? And I was trying to think of something Bruce Willis-y that, you know, because I wanted to do it for Rob Kidd, that was an, you know, 2 hours, and I wasn't trying to put something on you. It's like 3 hours. And I was like, oh, Tears of the Sun. That's a good one. And I did it. And then I watched it the next night. My wife fell asleep. She was sleeping on the couch. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to flip this on.
It's got sun in it. Yeah, nice summer exactly. movie.
And it's on Netflix for people if you do want to see it. And I flipped it on and I just sat there. It was like 10 p.m. and I watched it till like 12:30. And I was just like, I just flippantly assigned this to Jake. Just here's some a flippant, you know, assignment of a genocide, you know, movie about a genocide, right?
And, I texted Adam right after it was over. I just literally texted the title of the movie to him. And he goes, is that a good or a bad thing? Yeah. I was like, you'll find out.
Yeah. No, I once I watched it again, I was like, yeah, this was a thing, you know. And not that we're always going to assign each other happy movies or anything. We don't. A lot, you know. But I did think there was a nice kind of carryover with our Memphis Belle conversation, because we were talking about the Billy Zane character and how he, in Memphis Belle, how he, you know, has to make the decision on saving his crewmates and just dropping the bomb more flippantly, or doing another pass, risking his crewmates' life and making sure they don't hit innocent civilians, right?
100%.
And in this one, I was thinking about the idea that on one side, you have Bruce Willis as a commander who has to decide between both following orders and keeping his soldiers safe, or be doing the right thing. And it's like, usually it's following orders versus keeping your soldiers safe. In this case, they were on the same side of it.
Right.
So he had, you know, this heavy weight on him, and you see it in the movie.
Soldiers sign up, though, to put themselves in very dangerous situations, exactly, where they know their life is at risk. And yeah, those people did not.
No, but so, as the commander, you know, you still have to.
I get it.
And I actually think Bruce Willis carries that weight well in this movie. I think you can see it on his face, and not just Bruce Willis'
it's
face.
It's an extremely subtle movie. You could tell it's that era of Bruce.
Yes.
Where he's he's not the character. He's not John McClane.
Yeah.
He is a very brooding, quiet man, you know, very man of few words. Which it's
kind of a jerk.
It works well. He plays it well.
Mm-hmm.
I like it more in Unbreakable and Signs. Okay. That man, like that
Sixth Sense. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're right. Thank you. But this, it did work. And yeah, I suppose
that's enough. Yeah,
that's enough.
That's enough.
Now, another Sunshine movie.
Yeah, but a little bit of a gear switch, though. Not going to lie. Jake, what did you assign me?
You, my friend, were assigned the first film in the trilogy, Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise. What did you think?
All right. So for a second here, I know I'm kind of the resident sports fan of the two of us, but do you understand what it means when someone goes ISO? You ever heard of that in basketball? Clear out, I'm going ISO. You ever heard that?
No.
Point guard's bringing the ball down. You know, his teammates are all waiting for the pass, waiting for shot. Clear out, I'm going ISO. What that basically means is go to the sides, bring your defenders with you, because I'm going to take my defender and I'm going to try to go to the hole, right? Yeah, whatever.
Makes sense.
For the next few minutes of the podcast, I'm going to go ISO, Jake. And I just don't want, you know, just prepare people. I'm going to talk a lot. So if you hate my voice and only want to hear Jake, you're going to have to fast forward here. Kind of say something here first, and then I'm going to go pause and say a second thing, and they're going to be weird, but this is the best way I could actually organize my thoughts on this movie. So we'll start here. This is one of the greatest pieces of art I've ever seen in my life. This is one of the best films I've ever seen. This is an hour and 47 minutes of wonderment and magic and happiness and joy and elation and the most warm fuzzies and the most complicated feelings. This movie means the absolute world to me, and I've only seen it once. It had a profound effect on me. I watched other movies within a week of seeing it, and I hated them all because I just, they weren't this. Hmm. I didn't stop thinking about it for the first 3 or 4 days after seeing it. And I still have it now. It's been a couple weeks. The night after seeing it, I woke up twice in the middle of the night thinking about the movie and just couldn't go back to sleep. I cannot tell you the last time that a movie affected me this profoundly, Jake. We have had some movies on this list that you've assigned me that I've loved. 12 Angry Men, right? Was the one, Blowout, On the Waterfront. We've had some great movies. This is the first time that I'm instantly trying to find out how high I can put this movie in my top list. I unbelievably, unbelievably love this film. Okay, so now that second thing. Now I needed to say that first, but I want to say this. So anyone who just listened to that opening but has not seen this movie, we try not to do this, guys. I try not to tell you to pause the podcast and go watch a movie every time because that's unrealistic for you all to watch every movie we review together. So we try to be smart and be safe about using that wisely. Please stop the pod right now if you haven't seen this and go buy it on Blu-ray. Borrow it from us on Blu-ray because I'm not owning on Blu-ray as well.
You can find it on Vudu. You can find it on, I'm sure, a handful of spots
online. Yeah, I think it's, you know, rent it on Amazon for $3.99 or buy it on Amazon for $11 or something like that. So this movie, you already heard enough from me to know that I like the movie, obviously. But from after this point, there's going to be a conversation me and Jake are going to have that if you hear it and then see the movie, it will not affect you the way that it would if you just go into it knowing very little about this film. So I have to say that you need to have no idea if there's conflict, if there's heartbreak, if there's a happy ending, if there's a sad ending, or even what the context is, really. Just go into it before I just blow my feelings all over this microphone, okay? Was that the best possible way to put it?
He can't help himself, people.
I know. It's just everything is vaguely sexual with me.
It's not vague.
Everything is blatantly sexual with me. So for anybody who's still here, you either have seen this already or you're just not going to listen to me and go see it, which is fine. You make your own choices, right? You make your bed, you lie in it. I gave you a warning. What a pleasure this movie was. What an absolute pleasure this movie was. I've watched movies my whole life, and this is completely different. This is a totally unique thing. I've never seen anything like this movie. And I literally had a note that I wrote in my notes on this movie, and it was in big bold letters, and it said, I never want to watch another movie again.
Whoa.
So why is it like this, Adam? Why did it affect you this profoundly? What is it about this little hour and 47 minute movie, right?
You don't even need me. You can just do a pod by yourself. You can just ask yourself the questions and answer.
Clear out, Jake. Go and ISO. Yeah. And I'm really excited for your thoughts too. And we will get to Jake's thoughts. I needed to do this before I was influenced.
They know I like it because I assigned it to you.
I don't even know if it's discernible why, to be honest with you, but we'll talk about why I liked it and I'll get into kind of why personally I think I liked it as much. But the acting in this movie is some of the best acting I've ever seen. These two main people, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, they unbelievable. Unbelievable. I wish they had Oscars this year. I wish everything. How they did with their mannerisms, with the way they looked at each other, with the movement of their eyes, with the twitches of their face. I'm trying to stay organized here. There is a scene, so there's effectively two people meet on a train, kind of a random chance meeting. They decide to hang out together, and this is their night to hang out with each other. They know that there is no night after this, you know, in the storyline of this movie. So they know, and it's not right away like, we're soulmates. It's a gradual thing, right? But when I really started to love this movie was when they land in Austria. Where are they at now? Damn it. Vienna. They're in Vienna. And they get on a carriage to go wherever. They don't even know where they're going. And up to this movie, I was like, this is cute. This is nice. And then he is sitting in very close proximity to her. And it is a long scene. It is like a 17-minute scene. And it's very much shot to look like one take. It's probably not, but it's shot to look that way. And all they're doing is talking about life. They're not talking about anything related to themselves. They're sharing with each other what they're about and what they love. And they get into such random topics, right? But if you watch the whole scene, Ethan Hawke is very subtly trying to move his arm in such a way to get it around her. And it goes on the entire scene before he very casually gets it. And you almost like are like, yeah, like when it happens, right? This happens, though, in so many different scenes. The way they talk, the mannerisms, the looks, every single movement, twitch, subtle, like slight turn towards each other, it all means something in this. And I've never seen anything like it. I was glued to it. And each set piece kind of keeps upping the ante. It keeps getting better when I thought it couldn't. The carriage is where I started to just love this. But, you know, the way he, again, moves that arm within the shoulder radius. But then there's a scene in a listening booth where they're at the, they go to a, like an old school music shop, and you can go into a booth and put a CD in and listen to it. And this very beautiful song, and I didn't look up the name of what the song is, but it's playing and they're listening and they're not saying anything. And they're doing this thing where one looks at the other and they're just staring longingly at them. And then they'll finally like turn their head back. And that's right when the other person looks over. And you know that if they just did it at the same time, they'd probably kiss, or they'd probably like gaze into each other's eyes, but the movie won't give you that yet. And they just keep missing each other ever so slightly. And it's, again, in less capable hands, this would have been obnoxious. This would have been like way too long of a scene, and we get it. But in this, it was so, so, so perfect. The choreography of how they did that and how they acted that, I don't know how many takes it took, but if you told me 1,000, I wouldn't be shocked, right? Then the Ferris wheel happens. I absolutely melted into a puddle. You know, they kiss for the first time, and it's so perfectly romantic. And I'm not like, I am not a, when I get sad, when I get happy tears in movies, it's usually because something triumphant happened, right? Usually romance does not make me happy in movies. I'm not saying it makes me sad, but it doesn't, that's not what makes me love something, right?
It's not Rudy running out on the field.
Exactly. Never seen Rudy. Don't tell anybody.
Oh. To be continued.
The diner. We get to the diner. Okay. The diner scene. This is possibly my favorite, or at least up there, as one of my favorite scenes of all time. Whoa. In any movie ever. So in this diner scene, they're sitting there having dinner, whatever, it's 2 in the morning, who knows. And they've now kissed on the Ferris wheel. So there's definitely a romantic thing there. It's more than just like, will they, won't they, whatever. And they're having this conversation at the diner. And they decide to set it up in this way of, I can't even, it's going to be hard to explain if you haven't seen the movie, but effectively, they each take turns pretending to get a call from one of their friends and talk about the evening. And it is set up in such a way that you would think it would be cheesy, and it is no. So they both kind of put their thoughts on the table in this wonderfully silly way, and I was just overjoyed. I was so happy to know that they could, like, it gives you the option to say anything you want, right? And they also know this is such an honest relationship, because they know they can do anything they want, because this is the end. This is the beginning and the end of this relationship. They know he has to go back to America after at his 7 a.m. flight. He doesn't have money. He can't stay here. She's going to school in London, so she's on the train from Vienna to London, mm-hmm. right? So this was a wonderful storytelling device, and I kind of determined in this moment that I love both these people and I would step in front of a train for them. And from his perspective, he seemed to be like a poor, doesn't have a lot of money. He was a bit more transient. He was a bit more of like, didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. And she seemed educated and stable financially, and she had like a plan, right? And there was something about the moment, you knew, you could always tell how he felt about her. He was very kind of open with it. Despite the fact you could tell she liked him and they had already kissed and everything, I wasn't 100% locked in. And then she puts her feelings on the table, and I was like, I wanted to stand up and freaking cheer, man. I was, when she kind of confesses that she was like she says something like, I fell for him the moment, like at some very early moment in the film that she basically says that she fell for this guy. It is unbelievable. And then the movie kept surprising me and by what it wasn't doing, right? There's no conflict in this movie. I kept waiting for him to mess up and say something that she was like, walks away and right. He has to go chase her or, mm-hmm. Oh, honestly, it's really stupid, but there's one moment where a palm reader comes up to them and reads her palm. And then the palm reader's backing away from them in one slow shot, talking to them as she backs away. And she's backing into a road. And for some reason, I just was like, is she going to get hit by a car? Like something bad had to happen. Yeah. Even, you know, it had been too long of too much goodness, right?
Right.
So they do have little disagreements mm-hmm. about certain subjects, but it's never contentious. It's never long elongated. It's just, oh, well, here's how I feel about this. And it's just such a wonderful way for people to go about discussing their problems, right? And I just unfathomably love this movie. And there's weird thing here, and I'm going to try to keep this as concise and sensible as I can. But from a personal perspective, now, my wife doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm not saying any of this so that like I earn brownie points with her or anything, but there's something about this movie, despite this being a 12-hour, 18-hour relationship, right? And me and my wife being a, geez, 15-year relationship. Mm-hmm. There's something about watching how these two people were for 18 hours. And it's how I feel me and my wife are for 14 straight years. And there's something about that made me love her and appreciate her even more than I did. And listen, I thought I was leveled out on how much I could love and appreciate her. Right? Mm-hmm. We've reached max level. You can't possibly love or appreciate someone more than I love or appreciate my wife. And somehow I got out of this movie and I did. And I was like, holy hell, this is this wonderful thing that some people probably see this movie and wish they had this. And I've been living this for 14 freaking years. And it made me appreciate so much more what I have and the way that me and her settle our, you know, any dispute we have, the way that we just get into random conversations together down random topics and rabbit holes, and the way I truly love spending time with her. And that probably played into what made me deeply love this movie more. If I was 18 and single, would I have liked this movie as much as I did? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But you combine those two things. You combine this really personal feeling that I had that I just loved so much. And then you combined this absolutely perfect Mona Lisa ass piece of art that like Mona Lisa ass. I mean,
it's awesome.
Like put this next to the Statue of David, like put this in the freaking Louvre, because no one can do this. You can't do this. This isn't a movie that should work in any way. And it just floored me, Jacob. I don't know how it is. So I cleared out. I went ISO. I drove to the rim and I probably like just completely flubbed the dunk, and you need to pick up my rebound here and help me out.
Nothing else to add. You know who, I think you already actually told her, and she didn't spoil anything for me, but I think you shared your thoughts with my wife
at a
party. And I, like when you just started talking here in the, like just 5 minutes ago, whenever that was, I just started getting like emotional because I've had that feeling that you've had, that you have before. And what made me actually more emotional about it was knowing how much my wife is probably going to enjoy listening to you gush over this movie because she loves this movie. I really love this movie.
Yeah.
But she is like, you say the title of this movie, and you'll see how much it affects her. You'll see it on her face. So that's what is bringing me the most amount of joy, is like knowing she's going to be able to hear. There's an actual recording of you sharing your love for it, and she loves you, and she loves this movie, and she's going to get to listen to that, and it's going to make her very, very happy, and that makes me happy.
Brother, it's something, man.
I'm so happy that this won you over. I thought you were going to say it's really good. I didn't know. I did not anticipate it changing your world. So this is the whole reason.
That's why we do this.
This is for a moment like this, where it's like you just take a little risk and you throw something at someone and they respond to it either the same way you do, or even more than you do, or way less than you. And it's like, there's a gamble there, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of giving a piece of your soul, something you like about this world. Hey, I think you might like this too, or give it a shot. And man, couldn't be more happy for you. So that's really cool. That being said, I believe it was Valentine's Day weekend of 2021, pandemic. And my wife, on a Friday night, we sat down to watch this movie.
Had you either of you ever seen it?
No.
Okay.
And I intentionally purchased the trilogy from Criterion. I watch a lot of people talk about movies online all the time, and everybody gushes about this trilogy. And so I said, it's worth the money. There's no chance I'm not going to at least be happy that I own it, because I've never heard a bad thing about it. So took the risk, bought the trilogy. Friday night, we watched the first one. Saturday night, watch the second one. Sunday night, watch the third one.
Awesome.
All right. That was our Valentine's Day weekend. And now, I cannot stress enough by how important each one is to the other. They are a family. They are. This is important. I'm not going to give anything away.
Okay, good. Because I have a question about that before you.
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how these two characters, the whole premise of the movie is they know that this is their only night together and they decide at some point just to let it be perfect, right? And mm-hmm. not to change it. Is there any part of you that says to me, you had this profound experience with this movie, let it be. And don't find out if whatever happens to them in the future, 10 years down the road, 20 down
the road. Here's the problem. You will eventually find out what happened with these characters in the worst way possible if you don't watch these movies. Someone's just going to be randomly talking about these movies, and they're going to say, I can't believe blah, blah, blah. And you're going to be like, what?
Yeah.
And you're going to say, that's how I found out, because this random schmo just said this one thing. But at least if
I don't see the movie, it won't be real to me, right? Like, I don't know.
But, and I'm not saying it's for good or bad. I'm not going to give you that. Yeah, I'm not going to give you that.
See, because that's the problem, though. If you told me, and I'm not telling you to do this, but if you told me right now, this is how the next two movies are also, that you're waiting for something bad to happen and it just doesn't. And there can be little tiny conflicts and things, but they work through them real quickly and it's all over. And the movies are still just joyful experiences. And I'd be like, I'm going to watch them tonight. My problem is I'm so afraid that if they end up bitter and hateful towards each other in 10 years, that it's going to hurt how I feel about this movie.
Do you know how these movies were made? Do you have any?
I have the concept of them being made over the course of like decades.
Yeah. Each one was made 9 years apart from the other one.
Boyhood before
Linklater. And so you have to like build in 9 years of relationship between each episode.
Sure.
Each one is its own thing. For sure. Like they're in a different place in their lives in each one.
Yeah.
So are you going to get something different in each one? Yes.
Sure.
So is there the risk of it making you feel differently? I don't necessarily think so.
Okay.
Because I don't really want to go any further.
No, I'm fine.
Like I guess I just don't want you hearing information or seeing a clip randomly someday or like, and it was ruined for you when the writer-director could give you the whole painting his way. You obviously can trust him mm-hmm. because of what you saw in the first one.
Yeah.
So you can trust that you're going to get that type of quality throughout, regardless of what the story is. I 100% feel like you should see the others. Okay. Only for the fact that, like, if you sit and watch the others after you already know a couple big bullet points,
won't mean as much.
You're going to be waiting for it, looking for it, listening for it. You're going to be like looking for the nuanced things when in this, like you didn't know what to expect in this one. So therefore you won't, if you just watch them on your own terms, you'll get that same thing. You'll be presented to it and you won't know what's coming at you for good or bad. Straight face.
I'm not reading into it at all.
And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to say mm-hmm. something, it's not an asteroid coming to hit the earth. You know what I mean? It's not that kind of, but I would just feel, knowing how much you're affected by this, it would be devastating for you to not experience the whole story without on your own terms. That's
my second one. They fight dinosaurs.
That's my opinion.
So, do you know how when we watched the original
Terminator 2 has horrid sequels?
Sure. Yeah.
They don't affect my appreciation of Terminator 2.
But like, okay, when we watched the first Scream back in 1995, right? The bringing us back to Scream. We watched, at the end of the movie, Dewey and Gale and Sydney and Randy are the survivors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the Randy character, right? Jamie Kennedy's character. Right. He was like the movie nerd like me. He was, you know, he was the innocent kid who couldn't get the girl or whatever. And I think a lot of young boys identified with him, right? And then in the sequel, you know, the second one comes out and, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, halfway through the movie, and he like narrowly escapes death in one like five times. And I was so relieved at the end of that movie. And so then the second one, he just halfway through the movie gets unceremoniously pulled into a van and stabbed 50 times and killed. And it actually actively hurts when I watch Scream 1 now, because all those moments that I was like, oh, good, my favorite character made it, just to know he only survives two more years and he gets stabbed by Roseanne's sister. And
now, does it affect you because you witnessed it, or does it affect you because now you know the story?
Well, once you see a movie, to me, it makes it real, right? Like, you can tell me what happened in, you know, The Last Duel. I've never seen it, just for an example. But it's not real to me because I didn't see it myself, right? When I see The Last Duel, that movie becomes real. So these characters and this director worked on this, you know, these actors and this director worked on this film. And then they worked on the second and they worked on the third. So obviously they want me to see this story, right? Not me particularly, but people. But is there any part of me that I cannot express to you the anxiety I've had for 3 weeks about if I just don't want to touch this moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, can it get better, or can it just go downhill from here for me? I've reached the peak of Everest. Is there going to be another Everest that I didn't know was there, or is it just descending?
Now, here's the thing, is like, this is a complicated conversation.
I know.
Because I don't want you necessarily thinking all that's coming down the pike. I don't want you to think I'm trying to protect you from just bad stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I'm trying to protect you from good stuff being spoiled too.
Sure.
You know, so there's, it's life. Life isn't one direction. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, obviously, the way they're telling this story is like, anything could happen at any given moment.
Yeah.
Like, you have, like, it's just any conversation could pop up at any given moment and a mood could change in any second. It just so happens this particular moment was the beginning of a relationship. And I'm not saying there's an end of a relationship. I'm not spoiling anything. I promise you, I'm not spoiling anything.
It's just, if it's a beginning, middle, and end thing, that implies there's an end. And I'm like,
there's an end to the stories being told, but these are slices of life.
Sure.
These are a day in the life of. So just because the third movie has an end doesn't mean
it's
anything.
The end. Yeah.
It just means there's more. I hope they do another one. I'm actually kind of wondering if they probably won't. It's kind of like untouchable, right?
Because he kills her at the end of the third one. Domestic violence situation. It's awful. It's a terrible ending to this movie. Yeah, no, and I will, because I ultimately am going to have to. I guess there's just a part of me that like wishes, because, you know, always when it comes to romance and movies, the beginning is always the fluffy, light, happy, magical part. And the middle is always the complicated, controversial, you know, argumentative part. And then the ending is either the sad part or the really happy part, right?
There you go.
That's how relationships and movies work. And there's one path that this could go, that this could enhance this first movie for me. And there's one path that it could go, that it could be completely neutral. But there's also this third path where it could make me watch this one again in the future going, I know what happens now, and it's, you know, and that's what I'm anxious about.
You're kind of selling me on the fact that maybe you shouldn't, but
ask your wife.
I am eternally grateful that I watched all three.
Okay. And I will be too.
I was moved on a religious level from all three in different ways. And I think my wife is happy that she watched all three.
Okay.
I will confirm that.
Yeah.
And we'll have further conversations.
Because I'd like to, because I really want to.
And if other people are listening and they feel he should watch the rest or he shouldn't, go on Twitter or go on Instagram and say, watch them or don't watch them.
Yeah. They
just don't spoil it.
They took away the ability to do polls on X unless you're verified. But I'd love to put a poll up that says, like, you know, should Adam let this be a perfect moment in time or should he not? But, I don't know. I will eventually. The answer to this is we're heading towards an inevitable conclusion of one day I will give in. Even if I say I'm not going to one day.
Yeah, maybe live with the joy of the first one for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, because, Jake, what joy, man.
There's another thing, too, though, man. I know.
Yeah.
I know, regardless of whatever happens in these stories, the quality of the next two.
Yeah.
And so you're going to like the next two. Well, it's just a matter of how you like them.
You're right. And even the achievement, the technical achievement, like I talked about, the way they acted, the nuances, the movements, the camera work, to make this movie work the way that it did, everything has to fire on all cylinders. It has to be perfect. And it was perfect. We are like, we're talking where
enjoy it,
like,
man. Just,
I'm
going
to give it a couple years. And then at some point I'm going to have to decide, you know, if I'm ever going to have a cinematic experience like this again in my life, right?
Right.
That's the level of which I love this.
Well, you will, because you have before and you just had one now.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. I tell you, man, what a thing. I am
so happy.
Oh, brother.
What a movie too. Like, I just, it's just funny to, I think that's what makes movies like that so special, is that they're always the types of movies that you wouldn't anticipate moving you. Like, changing your worldview and like changing. Yeah.
There's a scene in the Batman, the Matt Reeves Batman, where Batman's fighting down a hallway and it's dark and you're only seeing the fight through the muzzle flashes of the guns. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the coolest sequences I've ever seen in film. And it was one of those moments where I put my hands on my head in the theater and I held my hands up. Jake, this is an hour and 45 minute romance where there's really only two main speaking parts. I mean, there are more, but mainly two. And I watched almost the whole movie like that. I was just like, as I hit the microphone, we got, again, after you get to about a half hour in the movie, once they're on that carriage, from then on, I was in such awe of what I was seeing. And I was like, kept being like, well, this, they're going to mess this up. And it, in fact, just kept getting better and it kept getting better. And I'm not even just talking about the storyline. I'm talking about the way that they acted and shot this film. I cannot stress enough how much I love this. And the thing is, there's going to be a ton of people who listen to this out of the, you know, approximate amount of people who listen to this,
right,
who are going to, and I know specific ones in our friend group who are going to be like, I don't know why that meant that much to you. Right. Right? And I get that. And I accept that. And I'm not going to ever argue with someone. I'm not going to be like, listen here, you know, John
that's
Doe.
That's what makes movies that you love so special. It's like, you don't care. It doesn't matter if someone else hates it. Mm-hmm. You will no question love it. Like, it does not matter. They couldn't tell you one thing to change your mind.
Yeah.
That's what's cool about movies like this.
Yeah. So if I'm arguing with John Doe about this and I'm saying, you know, this is why I liked it, and she's saying, you know, this is why I didn't like it, I'm not going to be able to say, well, you're wrong.
Right.
Because that's not it. But like, you know, the last movie that I've, you know, I think the last time I cried on this podcast was when I talked about After Sun, and that movie affected me in a profound way because of the father's relationship with his daughter. And it made me really think about, it made me deeply think about the way that I want to, what kind of a parent I want to be to my children. Right. And that made me emotional. The movie itself is fine.
Okay.
The movie itself is a decent movie. It's unique. It's quiet. It's unique. It's not a great movie. And I've never said it's a great movie, but it affected me on a level, and probably with a lot of just personal whatever. Right.
Sure.
This somehow did both of those things. This somehow affected me on that personal level. And also was me watching it going, this is a perfect, like, film. And
I'm excited to see it again now. I haven't seen it since 2021.
Well, I don't even know, Jake. I don't even know.
You got me jacked to see it again. Cool.
I think I've gotten it all out. I don't know. I can't say any
more
really.
We'll have more episodes. You can just bring it up and just say, so I'm going to bring up Before Sunrise.
So again, I was thinking more about that movie. It'll be the new RRR.
Yeah.
Which is, wow, what's similar in films?
Very similar.
Jake.
Same energy.
I'm spent. I'm an empty shell of a man now. I've unloaded everything I've got in front of you here. What are you gonna hit me with next week? And it is, I'm gonna hate it because it's not this. So good luck, brother.
Okay, well, it's kind of funny that you are gushing about this movie the way you are. And because the movie that I'm assigning you for next time, if you haven't seen it, is kind of how I felt about, you know, that I felt similarly to this movie. This one rocked me, but I won't say anything more. The movie is About Time.
I've seen the poster only in the sense that I remember being confused on why Rachel McAdams was always the spouse in time traveling movies.
Yes.
And that's all I know about it.
She's a legend.
She's got like 19 films where she's the spouse of a time traveler.
Yes.
And this was one of them. That's all I know about it, though. I know nothing else. So, okay, good. I'm excited to see it.
The fact that you even knew that there's time travel in the movie. That says something.
But, yeah.
I didn't. And so I thought it was like if you look at the poster, it looks like a very stereotypical
romantic
comedy.
I can picture the poster right now. So
when I just started watching this and like this movie just like starts taking off in different directions, you're like, what is happening?
Yeah,
I didn't know I was going to watch a good movie today. But that's my personal opinion. We'll see what you have to say.
I dig it. And just so you're aware, I'm going to hate it because it's not this. So, and just that's every movie that you assign me from now on, they're all terrible because they're not that. So good luck, brother.
All right. Challenge accepted.
I will just assign you Before Sunrise so we can talk about it more. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to assign you 2017's Eastern Promises by David Cronenberg. I don't believe you have seen this, correct?
No.
Okay.
I always get this movie in History of Violence.
You've seen that one.
Not in a way that I could like tell you what happens.
Okay, interesting.
But I've seen large scenes of it. I know that. I remember Ed Harris having a presence in that film. Doesn't Ed Harris have like a massive scar or something like that?
Yes, quite a presence.
Quite a presence. Don't tell me anything else. I want to see that movie too.
This is me actively adding.
No, I don't know much about, I don't know anything about Eastern Promises.
History of Violence to my list of movies to one day.
Actually,
it's like a 25 movie list. So.
I do know something about this movie, which anyone listening right now is just going to be like, this is the internet's fault.
Yeah.
Like how silly the world is.
You know about the bathhouse.
Yeah. I know about a naked fight scene between men.
Everybody knows about that.
Everybody knows about the shower.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you to see the rest of this movie. I won't tell you anything about it. It is a movie that's been on my list of things to recommend to you since we had in our movie group chat, somebody said something about Eastern Promises and you're like, oh, I've still never seen that. And I was like, well, guess what's going on the list? Cause I have seen it.
Nice.
I won't share my thoughts. So Jake, I have been waiting to give my thoughts on this movie now for multiple weeks. I do want to throw out one thing real quickly to people. The timing of our recordings is always a little different. We try to make these timeless podcasts. So we will, by the time you're listening to this, Killers of the Flower Moon will have been out.
Oh yeah.
We will have seen it. However, we will not have recorded a podcast yet. So
for sure
you will get our Killers of the Flower Moon thoughts. I know I'm a big fan of that book. We've talked about that over and over again. Down the road, you will get them. They just won't be around.
If I'm kind of mapping things out in my head, it might be like two episodes from now.
Sure.
That'd be close to that, two or three.
Yeah.
But hopefully two.
And, you know, I still feel like we could have talked about Oppenheimer for an entire episode. So there's almost a part of me that wonders if we need to make an entire episode about Killers of the Flower Moon. We don't even assign each other movies. But that's a problem for a different day. So,
right. Yeah,
in a couple episodes, you will hear our thoughts. I just know this is out now right around and slightly after the time that movie came out. And I want to make sure you guys know we will give our thoughts on it, you know, and they'll be fresh for us, but won't be as fresh for you, but that's okay. So thank you, Jake, for assigning this masterpiece to me. Thank you for changing my life. And I get that a lot. Yeah, no doubt about it. All right.
It's one of my favorite things to do in this world. I've said it before. I'll say it again, is recommending movies to people.
Is changing people's lives.
And just bringing joy that's my small contribution to the world is like, if I just recommend a movie to someone and they come back and they say they loved it, like that just brings me so much joy.
Yeah.
To just share art with people. I love it.
Well, I hope then this was a profound experience for you because it was for me. So, I mean, I don't know how anybody could ever react to something that you've assigned them harder than I've reacted to this.
That was a good reaction.
Yeah.
If we could get on that level every time, that'd be
it's impossible. There's I mean, like even something like we did talk about Memphis Belle last episode, like it was a good solid movie. There's not a lot to talk about, right?
100%. I totally get it, dude.
You know, and I'm not saying it's on the level to me of this, but this is unique. This is special and it's all downhill.
One guy you personally, I can tell.
Yeah. I'll never just end the podcast would be better probably permanently. I mean, not even this episode, I'm never going to like anything like I like this. So
that's really cool, man.
All right, brother. Thank you again. And, thank you everybody for listening. Please, please again, hit us up on social media, Twitter and Instagram with your thoughts on these movies or anything you want us to talk about. We really want to hear what you guys want to hear us talk about. So thank you for listening. We appreciate you and I appreciate you, brother. And we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, man. Thank you. Here's to the movies.